What is going on? Welcome back to the podcast. Today's episode is with the one and only Mama Prue. It's been a long time coming, been wanting to interview and really just more importantly sit down with the woman who brought me into the world. The woman who knows me better than I know myself in a lot of ways, because she's seen me before I really developed and she was with me the whole time and the whole journey. So this episode is so near and dear to my heart. This woman is, I really can't even find words. She's beyond words. Her beauty, her genuineness, her kindness, her compassion, her love that is exuding outside or exuding from her is indescribable. So with that being said, welcome to the podcast. This is with Mama Prue. So without further ado, my mother. Have Mama Prue in the house. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
I've wanted to have you on the podcast for a while. I mean, I've interviewed people and I feel like you know me the best. So this will be a fun episode to dive into, you know, many things, but we can get into you, of course, too. I want, you know, to share who you are and talk about just whatever comes to mind, but I'm really just here for enjoying a conversation with my mother.
So,
anything you want to start off with saying?
No, I don't think so, other than how proud I am of you. You make me laugh every day. You make me laugh every day, and it's just a joy to watch you grow up and see you become a father and a husband and just what you've done. I'm just really proud of that.
Well, I received that, and I, of course, want to just say you are an absolute saint having put up with me over all these years. Like, you deserve an award because that's just insane. I still am brutal sometimes, but as a kid, I was tough, huh? I probably got you to your end, like the end of yourself, like your wit's end. I think I've actually heard you say that. I'm at my wit's end, Brian. And I've gotten you there many times.
Yeah. You were exhausting as a child, but it kept me on my toes. It kept me on my knees and, it kept me, you know, humble. That's probably the best. Cause when you go into parenthood, sometimes you think, oh, I'm going to be the best parent ever because I want this child so bad.
Yeah.
I know that it's going to be wonderful. And then you've got another mind that throws a wrench into that or keeps it, so they keep you humble. And so that's what.
So you can thank me for bringing you closer to God.
There you go.
That's what you're trying to say.
That's right.
Okay, good. So you're welcome. Yes. I mean, yeah, I just seriously though, I'm for real. I feel like why I want to become the man I want to become and why I want to do good is largely in part of just like how tough I was as a kid, you know, and what I pushed you through. I remember just being just nasty on purpose too. So it shows you how much kids can be nasty on purpose. And it's like, as a parent, that's gotta be tough. Cause you're hearing your kids say, like, I am ashamed to admit, I would say like, I hate you. Remember that as a kid?
I don't remember that.
No?
No.
Or something to that effect, right? Yeah. Maybe it wasn't as explicit.
Well, I think when you got spankings, I think that's what it was. Yeah. I remember you saying something that wasn't too
kind. And I was just like, I would like give you that face. And I mean, yeah, yes. Spankings. I can't even, I lost count how many spankings I got with the glue stick. My goodness. Yeah, so let's start there. Who got the most spankings? So for context, I have an older sister and a younger brother, Maddie and Jared. And then I'm in the middle. And so, you know, if you're a middle child, shout out to the middle children. My wife's a middle child, so we get each other. But who got the most spankings off the top of your head?
Oh, definitely by you, by far. And I will tell you, you and Maddie, 19 months apart. And so she learned from you what not to do. Mm. So she was at that age where she was still having to be disciplined, but she learned what not to do from your
Shouldn't it be the
experience.
Other way around? Yes. Like, shouldn't have I been right. smart enough to know?
Yes. Mm. You should have been learning from her, but nope. She was learning from you.
Brutal.
So, yeah.
So again, she can thank me for giving her for going before her and showing her what not to do.
And then you probably encouraged Jared to get the spankings because you were partners in crime.
Yeah, I brought him into it.
Yeah, once he could walk, you were like, wow, I got a playmate. Mm. Because you didn't give him the time of day until he could walk. And that's then right. It was you and him, partners in crime.
Yep. Yeah, it's so funny. Like, just, and we'll get into some fun questions, and then like some questions I want to ask you.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, this is good. One of the things I was reminiscing on when I gave his best man speech, my brother Jared, this past, you know, I guess January. 2 months ago. Yeah. I just remember being so tough on that kid.
Yes.
Like, I was the biggest jerk. Couldn't lose. But then again, he couldn't either. I mean, he would unplug the... I'd be winning in NBA, about to win the entire game, fourth quarter. As I'm jumping to, like, solidify the win, he goes up and unplugs the controller. Unplugs the game.
I didn't know that.
So, but just stuff like that. But I do remember when I was so tough on him year after year, I do remember when he was better than me at certain sports. Like, basketball, he like, became that good. I'm like, oh, shoot. Like, it's real. Like, he's better than me.
Right.
So it's interesting how the sibling dynamic turns out, because you're the king for a while as the older or as the more developed, and then pretty soon you're so hard on your younger kid or underdeveloped sibling. Pretty soon, eventually, they surpass you.
Right.
And you have an older sister, Aunt Judy.
Yes, I do.
Judy. So you know, I guess you know, being a younger child, you talk about kind of, she was the popular girl. Mm-hmm. And you were kind of living in her shadow, or not quite, because you carved your own path.
Yeah, that's what I did. I realized I wasn't going to be the same, and I didn't want to keep being compared.
You're one of one, Mom.
So I decided to go a different way, and which is fine. And we both, you know, had a great relationship. We love each other, and it was wonderful. So
what way would that be? Like, if she was, because you were both cheerleaders.
No, she was not.
Okay, she wasn't.
So she was very serious in relationships, because she was very mature for her age. So, and just she was beautiful, and so she always seemed like she had a boyfriend. And I was like, I just wanted to have friends, and I was more carefree, and I was more into my relationships with girlfriends.
Yeah.
And so we just went, I mean, I really didn't have a serious boyfriend through high school. So, and which was the opposite of Judy. Mm-hmm. Judy, 9th grade, 10th grade, she had a boyfriend.
Right.
So that's kind of the difference. And then I was a cheerleader. She was studious. I was in school to get an education, but that wasn't my key.
You and me both, sister.
Key point. So that's probably what you got from me.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
But well, she had lots. She had friends, but she always... You know, she was limited in how many times what she could do because of, you know, having a serious boyfriend.
Sure.
So I didn't want to be, I just wanted to enjoy being in high school, enjoy, you know, all of high school, the basketball season, football season, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we had a great time. And that's probably why you guys were in sports so much, because I just enjoyed the atmosphere and what sports could do. High school sports was just a really... Mm. Just a neat experience.
Yeah. Sports are unbelievably beautiful. I think, like, sports and music and those things, you really can't, the value is so, you can't measure it, because it teaches you so much.
Oh, yeah.
Being musically inclined and, like, you know, the discipline it takes to show up and practice and get to a point where you're mastering an instrument or a craft like that is beautiful. And then baseball and other sports for us, like, truly did make us into the people we are now. Like, you can't detach us now from how many hours, days, weekends we spent, you know, traveling and playing ball and stuff.
And that's one thing that I would say to parents is find out what your kids' interests are. Expose them to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like music, acting, sports, art, you know, whatever, literature, whatever their passions are, to try to draw that out and then pursue it with them and be there, you know, do what they do and encourage if you can, you know, if you can expose them to that and you can afford it. And if you can't, find ways you can. Mm. And just do life with them through their passions, through what they like to do. Because I think that's what keeps them focused. It keeps them out of trouble. You know their friends. You know their friends' families.
Yeah.
And in today's world, I think that's so important because you just don't know people. I mean, you can't just trust everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be discerning, and you have to. And if you're doing it with them, then you're exposed to it too. So you have the ability to have that check whether this is right or whether this is wrong, and protect them. So.
Yeah, and that's really freaking awesome advice. And my mom hates when I say freaking, so
yes.
freaking. It's better than the other one, huh?
It definitely, but...
Could be worse.
It could be a lot worse.
Yeah, so we're good.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Is well, it considered a verb, do you think, or what is it?
Adjective.
It's an adjective.
Yeah, adjective.
Okay, like, yeah, that's better, but I guess...
Yeah, but who knows? I mean, I could be wrong on that.
Yeah.
But it just, I mean, if I had a better, if I was more articulate, more intelligent, would I need to say freaking? Probably not. But here we are.
Okay.
You know, in the backyard. I do try to cut back, though, because my mother, she does still influence me very much in a lot of ways. So I listen to you.
I still text you.
Still text.
Tell you not to.
I would call you every day at college.
Yeah.
First couple of years. I know toward the end, like, you know, you're getting to get older and all that. But yeah, I mean, we always have stayed in touch through the years.
Yes.
And I do want to get into some of that stuff. Just growing up and kind of just like my anxiety, panic attacks, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think you know me best. Like you've seen me in different stages of life, and it'd be cool to maybe speak on that and share. But before we get into that, a couple random questions I want to jump into, like rapid fire kind of.
Okay.
But yeah, I'd love to know. So you talked about being a kid with your sister. When you were back then, 6, 7, 8 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I don't even know if I knew back then. I just wanted to play.
Play like outside sports? Yeah.
I was always playing with friends outside. We were always doing that, similar to what you guys did growing up.
So just being a professional kid.
Yeah, I know.
Like playing for a living.
Yeah. I always wanted to be married. I knew that. And I think I always wanted to be a mom. I knew that. So those are two things. As far as a profession, I probably always, because I kind of looked at my mom as an example, and she did all the bookkeeping for our family's business. So very early on, I knew that I enjoyed that kind of work and doing a family business. So I kind of always saw that. I helped them out with doing inventory. I helped them out doing, mom taught me how to do the books and posting things and stuff like that. And so that's kind of what, you know, but that was a little bit later. It was probably junior high that I knew that.
Okay. So, yeah, that's later.
Yeah. So it was probably 12.
But I'm not surprised. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. Like being a kid playing, just love being outside, sports, and just moving your body. So that I definitely got that DNA as we're in our backyard. And I just got a sauna, cold plunge, shower. I work out back here. I'm always in the sun. I'm walking around barefoot. It's unbelievably awesome. And then I was going to say, Mom, you are like the biggest fan of people. Like you are the biggest supporter of people. And that's something I really admire in people, because you live in a perspective that's much greater than you. Mm. Like it's so easy to kind of live life where it's just like me, and the world's revolving around me. And I think that's something I've largely lived by, like in my life, like the I, the ego, stuff like that. And I always try to get outside of that or go beyond that rather. But I feel like you have a natural gift to be the supportive like anchor and rock in my life and others, but then also to push and support, like to keep growing and to encourage. And so like that's something that I really admire about you. You've always been that for me and always been my biggest fan, to, you know, to say it like that.
Well, I think you emulate it too. I think you've because the thing I get from people, I get a lot of compliments for you or of you to me. You know, they'll tell me how much you've impressed them, or, you know, and these are adults. And the one thing that they say or a theme that I hear a lot is that you, when you're talking to somebody, nobody else matters. They're the only person that matters. You give them that individual attention, and nothing else matters around them, and that you show worth to them. So I think that that's you know, you've learned that, or you've, you know, it's just you've felt that maybe, and that's what you want to do to people, but you do that as well.
I think it's full circle because you do that super well, and that rubbed off on me. And I think it's that idea of what you see in someone else is already in you in a way, or like the traits you admire about other people, you admire about yourself. Mm-hmm. And the inverse is true too. And this has been a journey for me, like in my spiritual journey, my faith journey. You know, when Jesus talks about basically bless those who curse you and pray for your enemies, mm-hmm. that goes against everything, naturally speaking,
sure,
you can think of. And so, and he also says the greatest commandment is to love your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, mm-hmm. and love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. And so, like, I would look at people as other than me or separate and think if I look down on someone for whatever reason, because I'm an athlete or because I have, you know, people know me or like me, if I look down on someone, I'm really just, like, hurting myself. I'm looking down at parts of me. Right. And people who annoy me, frustrate me, whatever that may be, maybe they're narrow-minded or maybe they have a short temper, I'm looking at them being frustrated with that. But that's the same thing I see in myself. So yeah. If I get mad at someone for being stubborn, there's parts of me that are stubborn, okay. and I don't like that within me.
Right.
So it's, yeah, that's been like an interesting journey to see people as truly see the image of God in people, every single person. And I think to wrap that up is, what makes it easier for me to be like super focused and in that moment and look someone in the eye and kind of make them feel that they're the only person that matters is to see them as if I'm seeing them through God's lens.
Sure.
Like, how can I see them as if, like Jesus, I wonder how he looked at people's faces when he looked at their eyes, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, if we can see people as like in the same way he did, full of compassion, full of empathy, full of patience, love, mm-hmm. then that's, I think that helps out. The natural byproduct is people are like, wow, she gets it. Like he really cares.
Right.
And you're just looking at people the way God would look at people.
Right. Good point.
Crazy.
And it's transformative, you know, in that other person, when you see them change because of how they've been treated by you or by Christ, you know, if they've accepted him, it's like just crazy.
It's the love of God, yeah, that right. that changes people's hearts. And yeah, so good.
Yeah.
What's a movie you can watch over and over again right now, won't get sick of it? What's a movie that comes to mind?
I just love Knight's Tale.
That's good.
Love
Heath Ledger. Shout out Heath, yeah. Ledger. All right, rest in peace, brother. Legend.
Yeah, that was one. And then I'm trying to think. Oh, it's a historic one that your dad and I like to watch, but I always get the name of it wrong.
Oppenheimer?
No, it's the Lady in Gold or something. It's yeah, it's really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah, Knight's Tale. It's Jared and I, my brother. Mom knows. Like we'll just sometimes we'll spend a whole day talking in movie quotes.
Yes.
We won't even say an original word.
No,
we'll just be quoting from A Knight's Tale, The Grinch, Dumb and Dumber.
Love it.
And I can tell you, it brings you joy. So that's another reason why we do it. Last one is, that rapid fire would be, who, dead or alive, you know, deceased or alive, would you grab coffee with? You know, if you could just spend, if you only had one coffee to grab with someone, you know, who would it be?
You know, it'd probably be my grandmother, my dad's mom, because she's the first Christian in our family, and I mean, I didn't get to know her as an adult like I would have liked to have. I have great memories of her, but I was younger, and she died after I was married, but I was still pretty young. I was in my 20s, so I didn't really get to know her. Like I would like to ask her a lot of questions on her upbringing and just how the Lord worked in her life, because she was wonderful.
Yeah, her story, her testimony. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you to like be a Christian? What does it mean to be a Christian? As I check the camera real quick,
okay.
But you can think about that. But I'm just curious because you brought her up, and
yeah,
that's amazing. First woman or first person in your family to be a Christian,
right?
What does being a Christian mean to you?
Okay.
Yeah.
So say it now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it means believing on the Lord Jesus Christ and being saved. And but it's more than just that. That's the starting point, and hopefully that's not where you land forever. And you grow in the Word, and you grow in the grace and the knowledge of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And you have the Holy Spirit that guides and directs and teaches you truth. And so it's a journey. It's not a destination, although you do have a destination at the end, and that's in heaven. But it's a journey of just faithfulness, living and learning and being understood and being forgiven. And, you know, there's a whole process. I mean, it's, yeah. And just to know that you have someone that's on your side and guiding you and directing you and helping you live.
Beautiful. Yeah. You reminded me of Psalm 139. Mm-hmm. And like basically that summary, one of the things you can summarize that passage by would be the one who knows you best loves you most.
Right.
And I think a lot of times in my life, it's getting over that idea that, you know, if someone found out about this about me, they would not like me. And we do that same thing with God.
Right.
But God already knows you.
Right.
Right? Like, there's nothing that surprises God that if you came to him, he would be thrown off by. Or so to me, that's really powerful, and that kind of summarizes a lot of the Christian life as well, just giving yourself over to God, surrendering to God. Mm-hmm. You know, stop trying. Stop trying to be religious or stop trying to be good. Like, that stuff is what we're made for, to step into the good and doing good and being in the hands and feet of Jesus. But that's not giving you... It's not making you more worthy in the sight of God.
Right.
It's not making you more, like, on, like, it's just not making you a better person. Like, he makes you good. Like, God makes you good. Right. God makes, he loves you. So, right. Yeah, it's the surrendering and letting go, which is huge.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, when we talk about, side note, who's your favorite son? I'm just kidding. You don't got to answer that.
Yeah.
What is that? I plead the fifth.
Yeah.
What was
who
it like?
You say that I say. Yeah. No.
We already talked about who was the biggest handful as a kid. So I think I'm behind the eight ball on that one. Like, who's my favorite?
Well, I will tell you this, and I've had these discussions with Madeline, because the child that you spend the most time with, like disciplining and the most maintenance. You know, whether, you know, the one
repairing
that you,
and,
yes, yeah. you have to spend the most time with. I think you could probably, you know, do a survey and find this true. But they're the ones that stick by you the closest and in their adult life. Because you fight by far will reach out to me more than Jared does.
Interesting.
And Madeline has that with her third born. And she's like, I know she's going to be great when she's older.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And... you know, the Lord's preparing her now. But anyways, it is true, because I think that you probably feel guilty in some ways, but you've been through a lot more together. Mm-hmm. And so there is a blessing with that, even though it's exhausting when you're going through it. And Madeline has shared many times with me that she knows that this is going to be the way it is when she gets older.
It's beautiful.
When AK gets older. And it will be. So.
So all you parents out there, basically, like, take heart, keep showing up, because those pain in the butt children or child could very well be your, you know, your best friend when
they're going to take care of you when you get old.
Yeah. See, that's amazing.
You're not going to go to a nursing home because you're going to go to their house.
Yeah. Correct. Well, there's something beautiful about that, right? The discipline and the time you, because it's so much easier to give up on a kid. Just be like, you know what? This kid's a piece of work. I'm just going to withdraw.
Yeah.
But you never withdrew, and you never backed away, and you never gave up on me. And that's amazing. And I love you forever because of that. Now, we'll just go right to this point, because, I mean, one of the things I've talked about on the podcast before, and I've been I've made it a part of my story because it is a part of my story, but publicly, is the panic attacks and the anxiety. So yes. What was that like with me as a kid? I mean, that happened when I was, what, 8, when I choked on some food and I had a really, like, almost passed out, almost blacked out from the food.
Right.
And then that carried over into...
Yeah. When you were 10, that was 10. When we did that swallow test.
So around 9, yeah. I must have choked around 8, 9, yeah. Or 10. And then mm-hmm. I began to have a really hard time with food, mm-hmm. chewing, swallowing. Mm-hmm. I have this mental block that right. I couldn't swallow food. It was it was bizarre.
Yeah.
And I was skinny, you know.
Yes.
But and I was also freaking jacked because I was doing push-ups, but not eating food.
Right.
So I was chronically undernourished, but I was training.
Yeah, you were lean and mean and
a fighting machine, baby.
So, but we didn't know what was going on. I mean, we had no idea mentally what you were going through.
Yeah.
We did not. I mean, we would try to talk to you about it and wonder, because the thing that you could not do is you had to have water in your mouth when you ate.
To swallow food. Yeah.
So you would put food in your mouth and then you would take a drink. And if you couldn't, you would panic. I mean, I could see a fright in your eyes. I could see your eyes, like, I just knew. And because I would say, Brian, you can eat, you know, give me this. And I would take the drink away at dinner time sometimes. And wow. And you just couldn't do it. Could not do it. And so, and I think that is, because anyways, they, you know, could have been like an OCD. That's when OCD maybe came up
definitely.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
because I'd have to do certain things to like get me able, like I would do certain things that would give me a comfort.
Right.
And then that allowed me to get over the next hump. So I'd have to comfort myself. And then, so I learned ways to comfort myself in eating. And food, the water, was a comforting tool.
Right. So I got to the point where I said something to the pediatrician because I was like, this isn't, you know, the next time we went in for, I didn't make a special, you know, appointment for it, but next time we had a visit, I just brought it up to him, he was my pediatrician. So he's old school doctor, been around for a long time, seen a lot of stuff. So he recommended this swallow test. Yeah. And barium swallow test, which was, that was a whole another
brutal.
Story.
Yeah. They put a lead jacket on. And- yeah. Made you swallow like liquid concrete.
Yeah, barium. Remember?
She's like, yeah, it's just no big deal. Like, just swallow this stuff in this cup. Yeah. I'm like, all right, cool. Is it liquid? Cool, because it's not. If it's food, I can't swallow it. But if it's liquid, I got it, and I took it. It was straight up actual concrete.
Yeah, I mean, it weighed probably 5 pounds, and it was a Dixie cup.
That's right.
I don't know if it was 5 pounds, but it was like a pound.
Yeah.
I mean, you're expecting like to be able to hold it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, man, this is not going to work out.
And it didn't.
But and the nurse was definitely.
Oh, she was horrible.
She was horrible. She was pretty brutal to me.
She was horrible. So we walked out.
Yeah.
And we went to All Children's after that because I was like, you're not going to do this to him.
Yeah.
Because it was brutal.
Yeah.
And so.
I'm going to change the clip. Keep going.
Okay. You're good. So then we went to All Children's, and it was night and day, the difference between those two experiences. So they were able to put, like, marshmallow. It looked like marshmallow. It was the barium, but it looked like marshmallow in Teddy Grahams. Do you remember that?
Yes,
I do. So it looked like a little s'more.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, so you got to swallow that. And also the applesauce, and they put it in that, and you swallowed that, and then we could see it going down your throat. And so that, I think, was, you know, good for you to see, because you got to see it on the screen, too. It wasn't just like the doctor saw it and said, okay, there's no blockage.
Right.
Because it was confirmation to you as a 10-year-old that, yeah, I don't have any blockage. I can everything goes through smoothly. And you didn't have any water to drink while you were doing this. You had to do it just by that. And so I think that was confirmation to you that, hey, you know, this is a, you know, something in
the mind.
In my mind.
Because I did. It's funny because the mind, it was the choking, which became a mental block.
Right.
Which then you start dealing with the mental block long enough, that becomes your constant reality. Then you think something might be wrong with my body. So it's interesting. There's nothing wrong with your body, but the mental block starts making you second guess.
Right.
And very much, I mean, in certain cases, I'm sure, the mind's so powerful, it can create certain things to manifest physically.
Oh,
but to your point, really good to see that There was right. nothing wrong with me physically.
Right. And I think after that, other than the water on your socks.
I told friends about that. I told Josh and Gabby here locally. And they were like, that is the strangest thing I have ever heard in my life.
I know.
I was like, yeah, that's some weird stuff. If you're curious, reach out to me and maybe I'll tell you. Maybe not.
Yeah. So that was about the only. So I think after we got the results of that and you saw that that was the, you know, that there wasn't, I think that's when you didn't have that issue anymore. So that was good.
Yeah. So let's talk about, because that then became less of a thing, but still with me. I think it was years, honestly, where I felt like I had forgotten about it. And that was always my prayer to God. I was like, God, can you just help me not, help this not to be a part of my daily thought life,
right?
Because it would be it would be every single meal, every single time I had food, it would come up, and sometimes it would snowball to where it was insurmountable, and I just couldn't eat. I mean, I remember taking food out of my mouth at the dinner table with my family and putting it into a napkin, crumbling it up, putting it in my pocket, going to the restroom, and then throwing it in the trash or in the toilet to be extra, you know, sneaky. Where it's like they won't even notice because I'll throw it in the toilet and I'll throw the napkin out. It was wild. So
that's wild.
So, you know, but it's also encouraging because that's a real food relationship to food that I think a lot of people can relate to on a certain level, because whether it be anorexia or binge eating or mm-hmm. just looking to food to comfort you in certain times in your life, you may feel like you're not going to ever overcome it.
Right.
But I'm sitting here.
Right.
And I don't think about it. At least I haven't thought about it today, but now I will. But it's crazy because I thought that was going to be something forever. And then same thing with the panic attack. So do you remember when I would wake up, I'd come in your room, you and Dad, I see baby girl walking in the, not walking, but Gigi's holding her. I would come in and sleep in your room because I was really scared. And I'd wake up at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., like thinking I was going to die, like thinking I was dying. Do you remember that?
A little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember you would sleep on the floor next to our bed. So that was always the go-to if anybody woke up in the middle of the night.
I'm surprised I didn't get stepped on.
I know.
I was at my sleeping bag right next to Dad's side.
Yeah. So, but yeah. And you were always better after, you know, being able to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it carrying over to the next day.
No, not really. Yeah, it was just, I don't know. I think it just led to, like, that choking and then the struggle with food just led to overall, I lived a very anxious life. If I wasn't playing sports and if I wasn't outside doing something with my body, distracted or in a video game, which I think that's why I am kind of who I am right now, because I did pour a lot of my time and energy into playing with the kids, mm-hmm. the helmets, mm-hmm. People in the neighborhood, being outside. Because if I was playing sports or shooting basketball or running, wasn't thinking about anything else.
Right.
So maybe that's why I'm, you know, more of an athlete, because if I was just sitting still, I would be worried or anxious.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely a crazy part of my life, and you know, we can expand on that more so, but let's talk about parenting. So what did you want me to know about you as a mom, like as a child? Like what are some important things that you wanted me to know as a child?
Well, I think one thing that we always tried to do, your dad and I, is to really love you the way that you would know that no matter what you did, you were going to be loved by us. You had our unconditional love. And I would say that one thing I would say is that anything you would sacrifice for your children is not in vain. I mean, it's worth everything. Because if you don't have relationships with your kids when they grow up, you gain nothing. You know, I mean, that's part of the blessing of being a parent, is to see your children and have good relationships with them as they become adults. Mm-hmm. Because that's not, your end goal is not just to have them survive childhood.
Yeah.
Your end goal is to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's what we always, you know, would say.
What does that mean to you?
That means you encourage them. You the nurture is nurturing. You know, you're going to love them. You're going to have compassion. You're going to train them. And admonition is the training and the discipline. Hmm. So you encourage them. You help them know who they are. And we tried to surround ourselves with like-minded people.
Yeah, you did good about that.
Because that was an important, you know, like the Helmets with them, with their friendships. I mean, just knowing that they love their kids and that they love the Lord, that they love their kids the way we did, that they taught them work ethic and, you know, that they, so you're around like-minded kids. So you're not around like people that are given everything, and if they whine, they get it, you know, they're just given everything because their parents feel guilty, you know, and we've seen mm-hmm. that in sports with some of the kids that you've been on your teams, you know, that they didn't have to do anything, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, but we've also seen the other end, that they didn't have anything, and that sports was the only thing they had, you know, so you want to surround any sacrifice you make, to get back to that, any sacrifice you make for your kids is worth it. And that's kind of what we're supposed to do. I mean, we're not supposed to, it's not in it for us. You know, we're not supposed to have the spotlight on us. I mean, that's one thing I've never felt comfortable, you know, doing. I've just always wanted to put the spotlight on, you know, other people, or, you know, just help them flourish, help them shine, and help them be who God created them to be. Mm-hmm. And like kind of like what your message is, you know, with people, you know, be who you are created to be. Keep becoming who you're meant to be, who you are in Christ, who mm-hmm. you are as a person. And hopefully they understand that God created them and mm-hmm. that they're here for a purpose, mm-hmm. just like what you say. You know, we are here for a reason. So also just time spent, just spend time. You know, that there was a, when we were raising you guys, there was a Dr. Spock, and I can't remember what he proposed or what his, you know, platform was, but it was not the same what we did, because it was, I think it was like a, well, there was a Freudian thing where, you know, kids, anyways, I can't even remember all of it, but we didn't embrace it. So one of them was, it doesn't matter the quantity of time, you just have to have quality time. Well, if you had 2 minutes a day of quality time and the rest of the day you had no time with your parents or your kids, they are not going to remember 2 minutes of quality time. That is not going to equate to 8 hours a day of time. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was just to, I think, placate people that were working and put their jobs and their corporate lives and everything ahead of everything else. And that was in the 80s and 90s where people were, you know, just that was their pursuit. Is, you know, you make it big in the corporate world. And we didn't really, you know, strive for that. That wasn't what our family was about. Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a lot of distractions in life that will get you off track. And you just have to really stay grounded and know your purpose and know who you are and really just be there for your kids. And one of the things too, there's just a couple things. Always keep the door of communication open with your kids because they're going to go through things that they're not going to know how to navigate through. And if they don't have a good relationship, if they can't just tell you things, because sometimes you'll go through some stuff or you'll do some stuff and you don't want to tell us, and then it comes out later. But if you have a good relationship and you can tell people, you can tell your parents, they can help guide you because they've probably done some things you've done as a kid. Mm-hmm. You don't think
worse,
so.
Worse.
And so you've got to keep that line of communication open. And one of the ways I think that this was modeled in my parents, in our family's life, is we always had dinner together.
Love that.
And so my mom, my dad, my sister and I, we always had dinner together. And my dad would always talk about his day. He'd ask us about our days. Mm. We would just talk. And so that was an easy – so it wasn't like I'm coming into your bedroom. Okay, so tell me what you did today.
Yep.
You know, because that can be confrontational. But if you're eating and you're around dinner, everybody's having a conversation, it's so much easier. And so we strove to do that with you guys. So even when we were busy, we would still have dinner together. We didn't let you guys go eat in your bedrooms and, you know, fix a plate and go – watch TV while we're all at the table.
Yeah.
So I think
that's so huge.
Yeah, I think that's huge because I think then that's where, you know, like events of the day or, you know, what's going on in the world. Those are times where you can talk about it, mm-hmm. you know, and say, what's happening? You know, why is this happening? Am I supposed to understand this or, you know, believe this?
It just gives you a ritual, too. Like, the rhythm and the routines are so important for kids. They're so important for adults. You know, if you don't have any routine, like, you can't tell me you...
Right. You don't feel safe.
Yeah, yeah. You would have a lot more peace if you have certain things. And it could be as simple as, like, you know, for me, it's like when I have the first moments in the morning and I spend it after I'm like wake, like finally awake from zombie mode, and I just spend it whether walking Drew and I'm talking to God, like maybe I'm so tired and I'm just like, Father, thank you for waking me up, you know, something like that, and I just spend that time with God, it drastically affects my day.
Right.
And then having routines at night, having routines in my day, I'm much happier when I do things ritualistically, like routine oriented. If I just worked out when I felt like working out, I wouldn't work out much. But because I've ingrained it in myself, like you're going to show up for 30 minutes whether you want to or not, like you start to desire the stuff you make time for more and more.
Right.
Especially if it's stuff that actually makes you feel more alive, mm-hmm. like prayer, like movement, mm-hmm. like working out, like journaling, reflecting. Like that's huge. And the last thing is the idea of filtering or documenting, compartmentalizing, filing. That's the word. As a kid, having dinners is huge for you to file your day.
Right.
Because it just gives you that, like, it's just, it creates, I don't know, I think it just creates, it's totally anecdotal, non-scientific evidence. But for me, I feel like it helped me file my day and make sense of the world around me.
Right.
And if I didn't have that, maybe the world would seem a little bit more chaotic.
Yeah.
So my inner world, I could organize my inner world, which organizes the outer world.
Right. Good.
So.
Yeah.
But thank you. I asked that question. You gave me some freaking knowledge. You just gave us some parenting advice. And I'm like, I want to implement that. Well, I'll circle back to that question, actually. Excuse me. What has been, you mentioned, okay, so we talked about, this is what I wanted to ask you. What's the best and worst parts of getting older? So we talked about, I asked you some questions beforehand just to kind of get the brain.
Well, the best by far is grandkids.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you have that's.
Five?
Pardon me? Five.
You have five right now.
Five girls. No boys yet.
Five girls.
So
man.
Hopefully we're going to have a boy or two in there.
We'll see. I'm trying my best, but it's all in God's hands.
Yeah.
But as you would agree, it's like it's the best.
It's the best.
If I had four more girls, I'd be the happiest man alive.
Yeah.
So anything else is just a blessing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that is absolutely the best. And yeah. So that's definitely the best. It's a highlight and it's wonderful. And
you're the best, Mimi.
That's the best. But and the worst. I couldn't think of something. I said the worst is wrinkles.
It's because you're so positive. You're like, what's bad? I don't know.
I try to embrace every season of life, knowing that it's a season.
Yeah.
You know? So I embraced parenthood. I do miss it, but I have grandkids.
Yeah.
If I didn't have grandkids, I'd be sad.
Yeah.
But I would still embrace, you know, my adult children. So, but I try to, every season of life, I think I've tried to embrace. And
that's good.
And so I'm going to embrace my later years too. So
yeah, I feel like you're a prime example of true beauty. Oh. Because our bodies, you know, we grow old, we have grays, we bald, like, you know, we get hunched. So as eventually we all get older and older and older, and no one's going to live for 200 years. But you are the definition of true beauty to me because your inner light and beauty and love keep growing.
Oh, you're sweet.
And they just keep shining. And it inspires me because that's what I want for myself. I want that for Gigi. I want that for Gianna and our future kids. I want them to be bigger on the inside than the outside. I want them to be brighter on the inside than the outside. And if we're growing in love and we're growing in life internally, that shows. So you're just shining more brightly than you ever have, in my opinion.
Oh, you're sweet. Well.
So, I'm trying to stop. You know what word I'm trying to stop using is I'll say frickin' all day. I'm cool with that. But I want to stop bridging the silence with So
that's a tough one. Especially when you're talking a lot.
Yeah.
Because you try to fill the space instead of just being quiet.
Mm. So let's just take 3 seconds. It's beautiful. Why do you think I changed so much as an adult versus when I was a kid? There's a lot of things I'm similar. I'm still very competitive when I'm playing. Right. It won't ruin my day like it would when I was a kid. But why do you think I'm so different? Like, I was a hothead.
Well,
I was
I think what really stood out to me is when you were in college. And I think I've told you this story. And it's just, I think because of how you were as a kid and because of how competitive you were, because, I mean, you were the most competitive kid I ever knew. And
fierce.
Everybody knew that. Yeah. And you were very talented. So you were good as well. So, but again, like you said with Jared, you know, when you found out he, you know, progressed because you were so hard on him, you realized you had limitations. And I think because you saw that, maybe, I don't know, because I wasn't in your brain, but I think maybe the Lord used that to redirect some of that competitiveness, because you didn't have to prove yourself anymore, I don't think, to people, or you were comfortable with who you were enough to have compassion on the underdog. Hmm. And that's when I saw a huge, because if I would have ever thought that was going to be a product of your life, I would have never thought so. Because when you were a kid, you didn't have any kind of compassion on the underdog.
Uh-uh.
It was an ends to a means. I mean, you were going to be the winner no matter what.
Yeah.
And so, and you didn't really care. I mean, and Jared was probably the brunt of a lot of that, like you said. But
love you, kid. Sorry about your entire life.
Oh, he loves you. And so, I don't think he'd change it for the world.
Yeah.
And so in college, I remember, and I remember this at when you played college ball in Minnesota too, with Wade, and just the way you, okay. So the thing I want to say about the underdog, and you can,
in case you guys wondered where, how I ramble and where I get it from.
It's me. It's definitely me.
I mean, Dad can talk too, let's be honest, but yeah.
Oh, but I know. Go on.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
trust me, I love it. I'm here. I'm just entertaining the people, because I know, I'm like, I see me and you. And it's beautiful.
You're going to be like, "Oh my."
I love it.
That's
I love
where he
it.
Gets it. Okay, so there was a situation where it was at FGCU, and I think you told me about it, or maybe we were there. I think we were there. It was the blue and green game. And so what colleges do, which I didn't know all this, we were like oblivious to a lot of it, but what colleges do is they bring a lot of extra kids on in the fall for fall ball.
Yeah.
Because they can't play, if you're a D1, you can't play other schools because there's limitations on the schedule.
Yeah.
And you can only play in the spring. Everybody wants to play in the spring, so everybody does it. So because you can only play so many games a year, and if you play in the fall, those count towards your spring, and spring is what matters for Omaha. So to say all that, to say you were playing, you had extra, you have like a practice squad. So they, they recruit, or they, you know, make the team, and they probably don't know that they're only there for the fall. I mean, I don't know if they do or not, but but anyway, so they're there, and then
they're hoping they're going to be around, but they don't know.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, So they're trying to make the team for the spring, but you know, a lot of them don't, because most of spring are people that are on scholarship.
Yeah.
So there was a guy, and he graduated with you, and I don't remember his name, but because I remember him sitting by you in graduation, I think. But he was playing, and it was the blue-green game, so it's the final game of the fall season, and you're either on the one team or the other. And I don't know which team he was on, but after the game, he was in the outfield. And he was, I don't know if he was looking at the scoreboard or if he was just standing all by himself in the outfield. I don't know. But you went out to him. And here you are. I think that was your first year there. And so you couldn't play in the spring because you were in the transfer portal or whatever. So you can't play the first season. So you weren't going to be playing in the spring, but you were going to be on the team.
Yeah.
And so you go out there, and he's like almost in tears. I don't think he was crying, but he was just emotional about the whole thing. And you put your arm around him, and you're like, hey, buddy, you know, how you doing? Or, you know, what's up? And he was like, I don't think I'm ever going to play again. This is my last game I'm ever going to play baseball. Mm. And whatever you said, and I don't know what you said, but basically you said, everybody has a last, I think. Mm-hmm. And go find out what, you know, who you are and what you're going to do. And I think, you know, and that was, I think, one of your big struggles is after school, who am I?
Yeah.
If you're not playing anymore. And so sometimes I think it's better to know that earlier on. If you're not going to do this for life, and how can you know? You know, because some people, you know, they don't progress until they're older.
Yeah.
But if you're not going to do it, it's almost good to know before so you don't put all your identity in that. And so anyways, and I remember, I think he sat by you in graduation, and it was just neat because I think he was like a criminal justice major,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he went on to know who he was, you know, and that may have been a turning point in his life. I don't know. But you had an interest in the underdog, or an interest in somebody that wasn't at your caliber at that time. And not saying that that was, you know, that you were fabulous, but you were, you know, you were going to continue on, and he wasn't.
Right.
And so, and I don't think you would have done that as a kid, you know? And so I think that was what changed in you. And I think that's, you were comfortable enough in your own skin. You weren't anxious about yourself. You weren't, you know, and I mean, you know, that'll come up again and again, but you know, you knew who you were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you made a really big difference in his life. And I think you continue to make a difference in people's lives by helping them to understand who they are. Because you take an interest in people. And I don't think you would have done that had you not been competitive as a kid, not, you know, seen everything you saw that you did, not seen the highs and the lows and the wins and the losses and, you know, just all that. So I think it just helped prepare you to have a platform, and that's what you do well.
Yeah, that's, thank you. That was beautiful. Yeah, I remember that. I remember those moments. I'm not sure what the, if it was a catalytic moment or just the journey God took me on from childhood to adulthood, where I did start living more out of the heart.
Right.
And empathetic living and intentional and compassionate, but I mean, I think the panic stuff, the anxiety, like I knew what it felt like to feel helpless and vulnerable and stuff like that, you know, college at Coastal Carolina when I dealt with it, like super heavily.
Well, I think you can see what a fulfilled life looks like and with glimpses of those things. And then you want, I mean, that gives you more joy than just being everything, you know, being singular.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just you anymore. You have a bigger impact.
Yeah.
You have a different circle. You know, you can affect more people.
Yeah. Just the power of multiplying, like having a multiplying effect on people versus just winning yourself. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think when you empty yourself, that's when you're most fulfilled. You know,
I saw Shia LaBeouf talk about, he's Catholic now. Mm. I saw Shia LaBeouf talk about the Christ on the cross. Like he says, I look at Christ on the cross and I ask myself, is that man joyful? He goes, the truth is yes. And he's talking about like the suffering of, like using your suffering for the good of other people is what's going to bring you joy.
Right.
And if you talk about the maximum suffering possible for the greatest good possible, that's Christ on the cross.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's like, yeah, like that. That's it. That's suffering and joy meeting its peak, its maximum potential, and that's God's heart for the world. Like that's powerful. If everyone understood that and like internalized that truth, it would change everything.
Right.
There wouldn't be religion anymore. There would just be people living life with God and seeing everybody as connected to themselves and knowing that if you're taking steps and you're growing and you reach down and you help people do the same, when you overcome, you help people overcome, you know, you show them how you did it, you teach, you love, you share, you give, then that would be like the normal. That'd be the norm. And that would be a beautiful world to live in. That'd be, you know, close to heaven. So yeah, the empathy and the suffering, I think, it's been cool to just grow in and share more of. So
yes,
crazy.
Agreed.
Yeah. We are coming up on almost an hour.
Wow.
Dang, it's crazy how fast time goes.
I would have never thought.
I know. And we could do another episode because I know we probably have to run here shortly. But
that was good.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to end the last question. I'm trying to find my questions, but what do you want people to remember you for?
I guess, I don't know. I just really want people to know that they matter and that, but as far as me, I just really want to be known for walking with the Lord and trying to, you know, get to know Him better and be a light to this world and the people I come in contact with. It's hard. You know, it's hard to, I don't witness like I should. So it's really hard, but I try to live a life that would be witness. So I try to live a life that's that people can see that I love the Lord.
I mean, that's the best way to, like, that's huge. People don't really care what you know unless they know that you care.
Right.
And you, that's a perfect answer for you. Like, that's, you fulfill that every single day.
I don't know.
So you do, trust me. So I'm really proud of you.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Thanks for sharing space with me, too. And so much more to talk about, too. I would love to have one more episode soon.
Okay.
Where we can chat a few, like, go deeper on a few more things. But that was pretty beautiful. And my timer for the camera's coming
Sounds
up, too.
Good.
So that was actually amazing. This is my beautiful mother. She is, again, true beauty. And seriously, you're the most beautiful person inside and out. And you've helped me in probably the most way become who I am today. So I would not be the man I am today without my loving mother and who you are, and what you've sacrificed and given. You're like a shining example of God's love and God's heart for people. So thank you for being you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Love you.
I love you. But thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. Mama Prue, the GOAT. Share this in the episode. I hope it encourages you. But until next episode, next podcast, we'll see you then.